This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. military says April has been one of the most deadly months for U.S. forces since the Iraqi invasion 4 years ago. More than 100 U.S. soldiers have died. In Baghdad, 14 U.S. soldiers and Marines and an interpreter were killed over the weekend. The deaths were the result of roadside bombs and small arms fire. Today in Baghdad, sectarian violence has killed 7 and wounded 16. Also, police found the bodies of 10 out of the 16 fuel truck drivers kidnapped yesterday north of Baghdad. A report by the U.S. Inspector General says 7 out of 8 reconstruction projects in Iraq have failed. The report blames poor construction, substandard supplies, and bad maintenance. The U.S. is paying $37 billion on reconstruction. Nearly 1,000 people have died working on the U.S.-sponsored projects. Iran has agreed to attend this week's Iraq conference aimed at stabilizing the country. Iraq's prime minister has warned Tehran sectarian violence could spill over to neighboring countries, including Iran. In Jerusalem, the findings of a government report probing Israel's war with Lebanon will be released today. Some of the conclusions say Israel's top officials made bad decisions at the beginning of the war and mistakes continued, led by leaders who were inexperienced and acted rashly. In London, 5 Muslim British citizens were found guilty on terrorism charges today. 2 men were found not guilty. The men were charged with planning to bomb a shopping center, nightclub, and gas network. Also in London, 6 Muslim men today face a magistrate on charges they raised money for terrorists. The men were arrested last Tuesday. Amid increasing calls for his resignation, World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz today meets a special panel behind closed doors to try to hold on to his job. Wolfowitz is embroiled in a scandal over his promotion of his girlfriend shortly after he was appointed to his job by longtime friend President Bush. It will be likely months before San Francisco Bay Area residents will return to their usual commutes to work. Yesterday, the heat from a fiery gasoline truck crash melted a section of the freeway and sent it hurtling down atop another section of the road. The truck's driver survived but was badly burned. The biggest fire in Georgia's history continues to burn more than 63,000 acres. More than 20 homes have been destroyed. You're listening to Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
British climatologists say April throughout the UK has been the warmest in 300 years. In addition, the average temperature in the past 12 months is setting a record, nearly 51 degrees. A blind British pilot has set a world record flying his microlight aircraft more than 13,500 miles, landing today in Sydney, Australia. Miles Hilton Barber made the trip to raise money to assist the blind in developing countries. He uses speech output from his navigation system to steer the plane. Delta Airlines exits Chapter 11 today. The nation's number 3 aircraft has undergone massive cost-cutting measures during the past 18 months. Delta also says it's considering selling its regional air carrier, Comair. U.S. Airways posted a 2% increase in quarterly profit. Earnings totaled $66 million. The airline also announced it was hiring 1,000 new employees to improve customer service. Chevron posted an 18% increase in quarterly profit on earnings of $4.7 billion. The oil company giant benefited from high fuel prices, particularly in California, where it is the state's largest oil and gas supplier. Light sweet crude is trading at $66.32 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold is trading at $682.20 an ounce. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Live from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right, everybody, get up, time to get up, get out of bed, time to get ready for work, up, jumping jacks, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, those of you doing Qigong, it's time for the crow, all right, everybody, welcome aboard. Of course, it's not Joe Vecchio, it's John Fox filling in for the working man's thinking man this week, as I do believe that Joe is moving house, which always means reconnecting your internet, joy of joys, being disconnected from the planet. What are you going to do? But I don't mind. I dig filling in for Joe, as I think he doesn't mind filling in for me once in a while. Bueller, anyone, Bueller, says my producer, Bob Kincaid. You know, in the chat room, we were waiting to launch today. We're talking about, you know, just the sad state of outsourcing and the fact that there's just way too much of it. And, you know, it all started, China Deb mentioned something that a petrol tanker on the Bay Bridge in San Francisco burned and the bridge kind of melted. And there might not be enough steel to do the repairs. I bet that wouldn't be a problem if we still actually produced steel in the United States. We're talking about communities like, you know, the many Allentown and other places in Pennsylvania, Cleveland, Ohio, all these, you know, places that used to have thriving communities on the production of steel, but because we can produce it cheaper, we have gutted our own country. And it's kind of funny that comes up because, you know, I'm trying to avoid doing the green thing while I'm doing Joe's show, but I found something that is both worker and green. So how perfect. Gene sent this to me earlier today, or sometime last night, your time, depending on, you know, where you are. There's a new organization called the Blue Green Alliance, and you can find them at bluegreenalliance.org. And this is a project of the Public Health Institute, and it's an organization that has brought the United Steelworkers and the Sierra Club together. And I find this kind of an interesting combination. And it says here, they've got various different, you know, news stories on what is looking like a blog here, on fair trade, environmental issues, blah, blah, blah. But it seems that they're wanting to bring together the fact that workers' rights and human rights and a clean, less toxins, all that kind of thing, are all really the same fight when you come down to it. And it says here, the Blue-Green Alliance is one of the most important initiatives taken by the environmental movement in decades, said Carl Pope, executive director of the Sierra Club. Good jobs and clean environment are important to American workers. We cannot have one without the other, said Leo D. Girard, international president of the United Steelworkers. The Blue-Green Alliance focuses on three key issues: global warming and clean energy, fair trade, and reducing toxics, including chemical security and green chemistry. Blue-Green Alliance is concentrating efforts in 5 states: Minnesota, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Washington, and Wisconsin. And I'm clicking the Read More link so I can go to the press release. from the United Steelworkers. And on... Now, this press release was from 2006 in June, but I guess they're really just kind of getting their act really together. But in Washington, the United Steelworkers, North America's largest private sector manufacturing union with 850,000 members, and the Sierra Club, the nation's largest grassroots environmental organization with 750,000 members, announced, they say today, but this is going back a few months, the formation of a strategic alliance to pursue a joint public policy agenda under the banner of good jobs, a clean environment, and a safer world. The Blue-Green Alliance is one of the most important initiatives undertaken, blah, blah, blah. This is what I read before. In fact, secure 21st century jobs are those that will help solve the problem of global warming with energy efficiency and renewable energy. A joint resolution establishing the Blue-Green Alliance was signed by Pope and Girard, declaring that this alliance will focus its resources on those issues which have the greatest potential to unite the American people in pursuit of a global economy that is more just and equitable and founded on principles of environmental and economic sustainability. I mean, this is great. I think this is just fantastic. And you know, I've mentioned this kind of thing before when we've talked about funding for this network, and we were, you know, we've been, you know, talking to the unions and whatnot, and, you know, the question's been posed to me more than once. You know, if I'm an environmentalist and I'm basically calling for the controlled shutdown of coal-burning power plants, how do I make that pro-worker or pro-union? Well, in my mind, why do we still stuff human beings down dark, dangerous holes in which to pollute our environment to keep our economies running? I would much rather see good working people working in safer environments. So it sounds to me that this joint venture could be, you know, I mean, combining, you know, 750,000 members and 100,000 more than that on the other side together, that's a fairly good sized grassroots organization. And I'm going to sign up for their news updates, because I'm going to be curious to follow on with this. And they've got links to other stories on wind energy. They've also released a joint paper on the case to support fair trade. And without reading it myself yet, I would imagine that they go on the vibe that we don't necessarily have to be looking at just protecting our own jobs here, but protecting local jobs everywhere and local workers everywhere. Because once we stop having, you know, American workers trying to bid against Chinese or Indonesian workers for the same job, to where we are making in all sides an equivalent rate of pay, then local economies will benefit and all workers will benefit. So that's that. And with that, we're going to take our first break as we come up on quarter past the hour. You're listening to the Cup of Joe radio show with John Fox filling in from Sydney, Australia. So you're listening to that Head On Radio Network. Stick around. We'll be back right after this.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, the problem with the so-called professional media has just as much to do with the news they're not telling you than it does with what they do tell you. If, for example, you were to believe what you see on TV or read in the newspapers, you would think that everything is just fine in New Orleans or along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. That's why unreportednews.net is so important. It's not just keeping us informed of the tragedy that's still unfolding on the Gulf Coast, it's helping to do something about it by helping families who have had their lives and livelihoods destroyed. Not just by a terrible natural disaster, but by the callous indifference of the current administration and their wealthy allies in the news media. UnreportedNews.net is taking the initiative to keep us focused on this tragedy, but they can't do it alone. They need your help. So please go to UnreportedNews.net and give what you can, and let others know what's happening there. Because the only thing worse than an unnecessary death is an unmourned one. UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important, since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show with your guest host, Don Fox, keeping the chair warm for Mr. Vecchio. So, straight from the Head On Radio Network news blog, Susan posted this one overnight, and from Alternet, and you all may have heard this, but just another good reason to rant about George W. Bush and the stupidity of the 28 percenters. From Alternet, did you know that George Bush was a war hero? I know this development comes as a shock and a surprise to many progressives who are familiar with Bush's military career, but he received a Vietnam-era Purple Heart Award a few weeks ago in the Oval Office. Seriously. 28%er Bill Thomas of Copperas Cove, Texas, decided recently to give George Bush one of his three Purple Hearts that he had been awarded in Vietnam. Bush was so blown over by the gesture that he invited Thomas and his wife Georgia to the Oval Office for the presentation. The medal was presented to Bush, and Thomas said, he and his wife came up with the unprecedented idea to present the president with his Purple Heart over breakfast one morning a few months ago as they discussed the verbal attacks, both foreign and domestic, the commander-in-chief has withstood during his time in office. Here's the quote. We feel like emotional wounds and scars are as hard to carry as physical wounds. Are you ready to vomit yet? I mean, and even the writer from Alternet
you know, was worried that some freeper was playing a prank on the folks at Alternet, but he's verified it's not a prank. I've seen the other links. And, I mean, this is... Channel 7 down here in Australia has been running fairly consistently MASH reruns ever since the war started. You know, it might go off for a few weeks after they finished, you know, running all however many seasons they had. And there's an episode where Frank Burns gets himself a Purple Heart for, like, you know, a toe scratch or something. And I have often, when watching that show, you know, I get more out of seeing the reruns of MASH kind of like, you know, every few years. It just continues to apply to whatever lunacy we're involved in internationally. And Frank Burns constantly reminds me of George W. Bush, the rich little brat who walks in, you know, full on lockstep, you know, the Red Scare, the whole routine, and, you know, getting some sort of award under false circumstances. And I mean, I feel really sorry for this vet. You know, I thank you, ELO. Yes, Frank Burns. It got a piece of an eggshell in his eye and claimed it was a shell fragment. I'll buy that. But, you know, again, it does such a disservice to anyone who served, but to me this is painful that it's coming from a Vietnam vet. You know, a generation of servicemen and women who were thrown to the wolves and played as political pawns. And I read this story and all I can think of is Frank Burns. You know, and I sometimes wonder if, you know, Bush walking around the White House when he's not within his protected circle, if he's treated very much like Frank Burns was, you know, an annoyance. Someone to try and ignore, but he makes so much ridiculous noise, you know, and loving up every officer or anyone in power above him because he wants that power. George Bush is Frank Burns. Who would Cheney be then? Who's Hot Lips for that matter? Getting into young boyhood fantasies. But we won't go there. But then again, my missus has a... Never mind. I was going to talk about some Olive Drive shorts, but that's a completely different issue. Ha 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 ha. She's going to kill me when she hears this replay. you tell him, ferret face. Ah, yes. The MASH references start coming out in the chat room. I tell you, it seriously is... I still say it is the best ever written television series that America ever produced. You know, the movie is fantastic, but, you know, to then jump off of what was a movie that almost wasn't to become one of the most popular series of all time. And I remember one time, you know, during the later years when Alan Alda was in negotiations for another contract, one of his stipulations was, because the network was trying to soften the show a little bit, was if he was going to sign up, there had to be a surgery scene in every single episode, because this is what the underlying point was of the program. War is hell and young people die. And all the comedy and nonsense that these people would get up to was purely in reaction to the insanity of the situation that they found themselves in, and it was a coping mechanism. So, you know, yep, suicide is painless. And, you know, I have to look up, and ELO might just pound this straight out into the chat room. There was a reason why there weren't lyrics in the TV show version of the theme. And I can't remember if it was someone objected to the theme in primetime television, or is there in that song, and I haven't looked at the lyrics in ages, in that song, and someone in the chat room can probably answer this for me, is there a reference to mescaline in it? And that might have been the problem? I can't quite remember, but we just purchased a collector's two-disc version of the original MASH movie. And that whole scene where they have the funeral for the guy who's not going to die, but he thinks he's going to die because he's lost his manhood, blah, 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 blah. It's a genius little piece of music, and it's a genius scene, and it's a genius film. And I find it very interesting that the television network whose morning show during the whole lead-up to the war ran a campaign kind of counter to the Fear Your Neighbor campaign that came on a fridge magnet from the federal government. They ran a Give Fear the Flick campaign to counter it. And I just thought I just thought that was great, because they obviously weren't buying into it. But in the pre and early war climate that we found ourselves in with the media, a lighthearted entertainment news morning program needed to find subtle ways to make a point. And this is the same program that's done such great work on the environment over the last year with their Cool the Globe campaign, which I've been noticing recently has not been quite so hot and up front. And I don't know if it's because it's become something now picked up by the rest of the mainstream media, or whether they've gotten some pressure from management or something to tone it down. I'm not quite sure. I'd love to know, though. I would really, really love to know. But, hey, there's a lot of things I'd like to know. I'd really like to know what was going through the head of this man who served and was honored with not one but three Purple Hearts, would give one away to a draft-dodging, coke-snorting, lying, never did any kind of work in his life piece of crap like our president. I mean, talk about... I mean, was this guy in the hospital and they gave him the Kool-Aid via IV? I mean, I really don't want to go smashing on this guy too much, because I don't know his history, but I really find it disgusting. Because, you know, what will happen when they get rid of the term limitation? Will they then in the Bush-Cheney 08 run be touting George and his Purple Heart in Vietnam? You know, selective facts. Put them together. yeah. Hey, Bob comes into our little production chat here, and he says, just like when the wizard gave the cowardly lion some courage. And I reckon you're exactly right. And funny you mention that, Bob. In third grade, I played the cowardly lion in a school production. Jumped out on stage and landed flat on my ass. It was really funny. Everyone thought it was part of the gig. I learned early, just keep playing along, son. Just keep playing along. They'll never know. All right, folks, we're going to hit our bottom of the hour break. So stick around. You're listening to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. John Fox filling in for the day and probably for the rest of the week. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network, and this program is brought to you by UnreportedNews.net. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Great universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways that strengthen its dedication to community, its commitment to service. In graduate education, in professional services to working professionals, in highly respected fields of study where standards remain high, in continuing to place graduates in the very best professional and graduate schools in the nation, Concord University remains the very best higher education bargain in this region. Don't ever allow yourself to accept anything less. Concord University, still since 1872, an education you can put to work. For an appointment, call 1-800-344-6679.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Each year, thousands of workers are killed on the job and even more are injured. On April 28th, workers and communities around the country honored Workers' Memorial Day, a day to recognize those who have been killed or injured on the job. In North Dakota, 14 workers died on the job last year. Out of respect, North Dakotans gathered on the steps of the Capitol building in Bismarck. Rick Fenning, president of the Missouri Slope Central Labor Council, said fatalities continue to rise in that state due to the type of work.
Part of that's probably due to increased construction, increased activity in the oil fields, and I don't see anything that's going to stop this trend in the future.
Part of the reason the date April 28th was chosen was because that is also the date in 1989 that the Occupational Safety and Health Administration was founded. Fenning says until workplace safety laws get tougher, the death toll will continue to climb.
The criminal penalty for willfully causing the death of a worker is 6 months in jail, and the penalty for harassing wildlife on federal land is twice that.
In its latest effort to provide a voice on the job for IBM workers, the CWA's Alliance at IBM recently took issues like CEO pay, worker pensions, and offshoring to the IBM shareholders meeting.
Once known as an almost paternal, stable, quintessential American employer with good pay and benefits, IBM today is a very different corporate animal that's embraced some of the worst elements of globalization. Alliance at IBM's Lee Conrad.
Bloated executive compensation is definitely an issue that Alliance members are concerned with, especially considering that IBM employees have seen cutbacks in pay and benefits for the last couple years, while the executives, you know, laugh all the way to the bank. The other issue is offshoring of IBM employee jobs. We're seeing a very big increase in jobs being shifted to India, Brazil, and China.
Alliance at IBM intends to be a permanent presence at the corporation, pushing to organize to advance workers' interests at the company.
This is really an uphill battle to get IBM unionized and get people joining the Alliance. But nonetheless, the Alliance at IBM is always up front with what we're trying to do to bring, you know, a voice to IBM employees and justice in the workplace. And we're going to continue to do that, even without a collective bargaining agreement.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Teachers in Hayward, California were back on the job last week after a strike that lasted 10 school days. The new contract passed with 89% approval from the teachers, who will receive an 8% increase effective immediately and a 3% increase in February 2008. The teachers had been seeking a 16% pay increase, similar to one received by two vice superintendents. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Cup of Dough Radio Show with Don Fox, keeping the chair warm. And just a little plug for my show later. Those of you that are already listening today have probably been to the new Head On Radio Network set website and probably looking and going, wow, that's unusual colors. Well, I'll have the guys on who are responsible for those colors. Mr. Mark Antkush and John Doucette or Duchette. I'm not quite sure how it's pronounced. But these guys have a blog that deals with greening up your IT. And they're also responsible for, or Mark is, for the Black Google post that came out a few months ago. I'm going to have them, we're going to have an interesting little conversation. They said there's heaps of stuff that we can do to green up our information technology lives. So that should be very interesting. I'm looking forward to that. And I hope you all are kind of digging the look of the new site and some more functionality. There's still some things to be done yet. We'll keep working through all that during the next couple of days. But there's separate blogs for all the shows. It's a groovy thing. I'm pretty pleased with 2 weeks of solid work on that one. So Melbourne University Publishing, who is the publisher for my good friend Anthony Lowenstein, who Bob had on his program a couple of weeks ago, he talks about his publisher like they're saints. They work very, very hard for their signees. They also really fight for the concepts of free speech and trying to open up dialogue. They publish a lot of things that other people might not publish. Anthony's book is a really good example. However, they end up winning in the end, and they have just published the first book on David Hicks, and there's some interesting arguments coming out, because Australia has some laws that say you cannot profit from a crime. In other words, you know, if you've been tried and convicted, you know, of murder or some other such violent crime, you can't write a book about it and make any profit. Well, it seems that the tribunals, the kangaroo military tribunal system, is so flawed that it won't hold legal water in this country, and it's created quite a firestorm over the last couple of days. And from the Age, which is theage.com.au. They say publishers will be lining up to sign David Hicks to a book deal after lawyers said the convicted terrorist would be able to profit from telling a story. The first book to be written about Hicks' five-year detention in Guantanamo Bay is due to go on sale tomorrow, prompting Attorney General Philip Ruddock to commit to ensuring the Adelaide man does not cash in on future publications. While Hicks will receive no money from Detainee 002, written by ABC journalist Lee Sales,
Publishers believe he has the right to profit from penning his own book. Melbourne University Publishing, which published Detainee 002, has received legal advice that Hicks' plea agreement with the U.S. authorities would not prevent him writing about his involvement with the Taliban in Afghanistan and his detention at Guantanamo Bay. And here comes Louise Adler, who is the chief executive of Melbourne University Publishing, and I can't even tell you how many times Anthony has praised her for standing up for him when the crazies have come out to try their character assassinations. It says, the legal advice says the plea agreement is not worth the paper it's written on. Now, some people are going to say, you know, why are you supporting this? Well, it's not necessarily that I'm supporting it. Again, the point comes up, if this guy truly was guilty and there was such a strong case against him, why was he held for 5 years without trial? Why was there not a proper evidence trail, you know, established? Well, because it was all political. And the timing of the plea deal and the agreement, I'm sorry, only stinks. It stinks to high heaven of a deal for Johnny Howard by George W. Bush. Because Johnny Howard was getting slammed over here for basically letting an Australian citizen rot in a foreign jail without a trial. And again, this is so, and why this argument about the publishing thing is about, it really is truly about free speech. There's a lot of confusion about this story. The gag order looks like it can't stand. So, you know, now he'd have to have a ghostwriter, because I think he only went as far as the ninth grade. So he won't be penning a novel himself. Now, Louise Adler continues and says, any profits could not be seized or confiscated and would not constitute proceeds of a crime. And there is a battery of lawyers willing to argue the case. As a publisher, it really offends my notion of free speech to think that he could not write a book. To me, it just sounds like they're wanting to shut him down. And our attorney general said that if they do find a loophole in the law, he will immediately amend the law in retrospect to close it off. So this doesn't sound like it has anything to do with law or justice. This has to do with keeping him quiet. And I personally, even though there is some evidence to support that he may have done some uncool things, some wrong things in some ways, anything he did, by all accounts that I've seen, and I've done a fair bit of reading, none of them actually constitute any kind of war crime. Okay? He himself has said he's never fired on a U.S. soldier, a coalition soldier, or a UN soldier. He went and backed Muslims in street fights. And as Bob Kincaid reminds me here, in the United States, what our attorney general is wanting to do, and I mean, this guy seriously looks like The Walking Dead, be an ex post facto law and would violate the Constitution. And an interesting thing here in Australia, we don't have a Bill of Rights. There's a Constitution, but no Bill of Rights. And any time that a discussion seems to come up about it, the right wing says, oh, we don't need one. The unwritten Australia is the place of a fair go is good enough. and it ends up being it's a mess. And Bob makes another interesting point here. Thanks for just feeding me stuff here, Bob. He says what Hicks and the Americans did was and what the American did, you're talking about the American Taliban young guy did, was the same as many folks did in the 30s in going to fight the fascists in Spain. There were so many, they had their own brigade, the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. I didn't even know that. Wow. My producer's poking my buttons here. But, you know, there's some interesting, Philip Ruddock coming out and saying that he'll rewrite the law in hindsight just to stop him from writing a book, you know, just says volumes. Says, I don't want this guy talking. I don't want this guy to be able to say how he was abused, even though under duress he signed in the plea agreement that, he was never abused, even though he was. And they also made such a stink when the drawings came out from the trial that he had put on weight, and they said, look, see, he's feeding them. They see they're being fed. They're being fed so well that he got fat. How about maybe it equates to the drugs that they pumped him with and the fact that he only was able to move around for 10 minutes a day or something insane like that. Absolutely nuts. All right, folks, we're going to take our last break here on Monday's Cup of Joe radio show. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network with your guest host, John Fox. And stay around, because we'll be right back after this.
Advertising on the Cup of Joe radio show is both easy and inexpensive. Ads that cost as little as $5 a piece are a bargain when you consider that the Cup of Joe show has an audience in the thousands for a live show, and that's not even counting the thousands more that listen on iTunes or at the archives on the White Rose Society. And all you have to do is email me at joe@cupjoe.com, that's cupjoe.com, to find out how you can advertise your blog, organization, or product. What are you waiting for? Email me now at joe@cupjoe.com, cupjoe.com, and let internet radio ads work for you.
It must have been prayer meeting with Reverend Brother Bob.
See, hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
You absolutely know that you cannot mention Robert Sunday without conjuring me. This is a known fact.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, sometimes I do it on purpose.
You know, the thing that kills me, you know, God just continues to punk Robert Sunday. after time, and it goes back for years, you know. Let's talk a minute about his business venture. From 91 to 94, he was involved in something called CaloVita, and it was a multi-level marketing company that breeds that pyramid.
Yeah, like Amway.
Sold beauty products and healthcare products. Oh, they had a product called Sea of Galilee Mud Mask.
No, they did not.
Oh, yes, thank you.
You no.
Bob, as a heart attack, I'm serious.
Sea of Galilee Mud Mask?
Oh, yes, it was part of the product line.
Prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, Wednesday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. here on the Head On Radio Network.
What? You like music diversity? You enjoy discovering and supporting independent artists? You want to listen to something new and different and cool? Oh, well, you better act fast then. Go to SaveNetRadio.org and sign the petition to help save internet radio. If you don't, the big record labels are going to butter their bread with your internet. SaveNetRadio.org. What? You like music diversity? You enjoy discovering and supporting independent artists? You want to listen to something new and different and cool? Oh, well, you better act fast then. Go to SaveNetRadio.org and sign the petition to help save internet radio. If you don't, the big record labels are going to butter their bread with your internet. SaveNetRadio.org.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
To a story. There was a PSA that just played about saving internet radio, and of course, being an internet radio network, this is something very near and dear to our hearts. I've heard some noise that there may be a repeal in the works of the commission and fee rate that had just been negotiated in the federal government, which would basically put out of business anyone who does what we do and makes their content out of music primarily. We kind of fall into a gray area of sorts because it's not the core of what we do. However, I'm going to do some reading on that, and hopefully maybe we finally have some people in the federal government in the United States that are going, oh, hold on, wait a minute. Maybe we you know, kind of sucked up to the wrong side here. So maybe some positive news on that front. But the pet food thing that's been going on in the States, this really, really freaks me out. And I've been looking very carefully for signs of such things here in Australia. And I spoke to a vet a couple weekends ago who runs kind of like a little bit of a pet info stand at the local shopping mall on the weekends. And he said, thankfully, all the major producers of pet food in Australia all produce from local ingredients. There were a couple he wasn't quite sure about, but you know, they were actually made from local ingredients here, and that makes a difference, because in the New York Times, right on the front page, filler and animal feed is open secret in China. As American food safety regulators head to China to investigate how a chemical made from coal found its way into pet food that killed dogs and cats in the United States, workers in this heavily polluted northern city openly admit that the substance is routinely added to animal feed as fake protein. For years, producers of animal feed all over China have secretly supplemented their feed with the substance called melamine, a cheap additive that looks like protein in tests, even though it does not provide any nutritional benefits, according to melamine scrap traders and agricultural workers here. Many companies buy melamine scrap to make animal feeds such as fish feed, said Ji Denghui, general manager for the Fujian Sanming Dinghu Chemical Company, which sells melamine. I don't know if there's a regulation on it. Probably not. No law or regulation says don't do it, so everyone's doing it. The laws in China are like that, aren't they? If there's no accident, there won't be any regulation. Melamine is at the center of a recall of 60 million packages of pet food after the chemical was found in wheat gluten linked this month to the deaths of at least 16 pets, and the illness is of possibly thousands of pets in the United States. No one knows exactly how melamine, which is not believed to be particularly toxic, became so fatal in pet food, but its presence in any form of American food is illegal. The link to China has set off concerns among critics of the Food and Drug Administration that ingredients in pet food as well as human food, which are increasingly coming from abroad, are not adequately screened, and this is very, very true. They have fewer people inspecting product at the ports than ever before, says Carolyn Smith-DeWall, the director of food safety for the Center for Science and the Public Interest in Washington. Until China gets programs in place to verify the safety of their products, they need to be inspected by U.S. inspectors. This open-door policy on food ingredients is an open invitation for an attack on the food supply, either intentional or unintentional. Now, with evidence mounting that the tainted wheat gluten came from China, American regulators have been granted permission to visit the region to conduct inspections of food treatment facilities. And, I mean, seriously, again. How about, you know, employing American workers to make pet food for American pets? We'd be able to keep a much closer eye on what's going on. And, I mean, this is just, this is the pet world version of what's happening with food production globally. You know, if strict labeling ends up giving people the mental ammunition they need to make smart choices, the food companies lobby the governments to make such labeling illegal, like they have done in America with GM foods. And because our food production is so centralized and mechanized, it only takes contamination in one place to actually affect millions. And it's absolutely just, it's another sign where, you know, this outsourcing concept just does not work. You know, and it's also all this outsourcing, you know, of, you know, you should trade with other nations and things that you don't produce. But, you know, if you both make pencils and can both make pencils, you shouldn't be selling each other pencils. It's very simple. And you know, it freaks me out to think that we depend on so much of our food to come from overseas. We have the same problem here in Australia, and we're really going to get hit hard as the crops this year run into failure because of the drought. I mean, we have had some rain in the past few days, over the last couple of weeks, but it's been so bad over the past 5-6 years that it's going to take 6 months of solid rain just for it to all kind of come back into balance, which means it's not going to. Australia is seeing the impacts of global warming right here and now, no matter how much John Howard wants to try and spin it in some other fashion. So with that, folks, we're going to wrap it up here on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. As you know, the Cup of Joe Radio Show is brought to you by unreportednews.net, where you can get your unreported news. And thanks to Bob Cade for producing. Thanks to the moms in the chat room, the bloggers, our news ninjas who do such a good job keeping us informed of this, that, and other things. And around the new website, I think. Stick around, because I'll be back straight after the news with Fucked Up, our regular free news day, and then our interview with the point who came up with our not for us being used. Stick around, you're listening to Head On Radio Network. Hey, back to work! With the creamer of steam, how many more does that leave? Give me a pot of scotch, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of pigs, that'll do. Every trail to the carafe of mash upon a tray of gray, I'll lick a spoon of shore. Do I need to go on? I want a cup of joe. Don't give me no money.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. military says April has been one of the most deadly months for U.S. forces since the Iraqi invasion 4 years ago. More than 100 U.S. soldiers have died. In Baghdad, 14 U.S. soldiers and Marines and an interpreter were killed over the weekend. The deaths were the result of roadside bombs and small arms fire. A report by the U.S. Inspector General says 7 out of 8 reconstruction projects in Iraq have failed. The report blames poor construction, substandard supplies, and bad maintenance. Iran has agreed to attend this week's Iraq conference aimed at stabilizing the country. Iraq's prime minister has warned Tehran's sectarian violence could spill over to neighboring countries, including Iran. In London, 5 Muslim British citizens were found guilty of terrorism charges today and sentenced to 40 years in prison. 2 men were found not guilty. The men were charged with planning to bomb a shopping center, nightclub, and gas network. Pakistan's interior minister is recovering from wounds sustained in a suicide bombing Saturday. 28 were killed when the bomber detonated himself during a public speech. 52 were wounded. Kidnappers have released 9 oil field workers they seized last week during an attack on a Chinese oil field in Ethiopia. 77 people were killed in that raid. The Washington Post reports only $40 million have been used of the $854 million offered by foreign nations to help with Hurricane Katrina recovery. Most of the aid money wasn't even collected. In addition, the White House turned down donations of medicines, housing, and mobile phones. The U.S. has spent $125 billion repairing the Gulf Coast region. It will likely be months before the San Francisco Bay Area residents will return to their usual commutes to work. Yesterday, the heat from a fiery gasoline truck crash melted a section of the freeway and sent it hurtling down a